I'm Glenn Stone, pastor at Moberly, and today our special guest, great leader, by the way, you like that setup, is Rogers Pope Jr., very special guest, and I'll tell you a little bit more about our relationship, but Rogers, good to have you, man.
Thank you, Glenn. It's really a pleasure to be here. I have to say it's a pleasure to be back at Moberly. I was a member of Moberly for over 20 years. My wife and I moved to Tyler about 3.5 years ago, but spent many great years here as a member, and I've enjoyed coming back this evening to see a lot of familiar faces.
Well, we're glad to have you, Rogers. You've been a staple in East Texas in many, many great ways, and God's used you in not just leadership in the business world, certainly your role as CEO at Texas Bank and Trust, a wonderful organization that continues to grow and impact East Texas and beyond, but in the faith community, God's used you in a lot of different ways, and we'll touch on a lot of those things tonight. The topic is leaders have succession plans, and so we've talked a little bit about what that looks like in Moses' life. I know Jethro came alongside and gave Moses some great tips along the way. And tonight, we really want to look into Deuteronomy 34, toward the end of Moses' life, and even the beginning, the next book of the Bible. Joshua is going to introduce us to kind of his role in that. And this is not a grim subject at all, Rogers, I know, but you and I both know that no one's going to last forever.
Right.
And so we've got to talk about succession plans. Of course, I'm sitting in a seat that a succession plan wasn't really talked about until toward the very end of my predecessor. You have a little different spin on that a little bit. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Okay. Yes, I've been with Texas Bank and Trust, formerly Longview Bank and Trust, now for 25 years, in fact. And part of what we're going to talk about tonight as it relates to succession is I've had the privilege of working those 25 years with my father, Rogers Pope Sr., who this year celebrated 50 years with our organization. He did step down as CEO a number of years ago, but he stays involved as the chairman of our board of directors. So that's been a great blessing in my life. Kind of got there through a little bit of a circuit. Kudos path. I was born in Dallas, but reared in Longview, graduated from Longview High School, went to college at Baylor University.
It's a great time to be a Baylor Bear.
It is a great time to be a Baylor Bear. Sick 'em. We need a good weekend. We need a few things to
we
fall
need a
our
few,
way
yeah.
for the playoffs.
But circuitous things to occur.
That's exactly that's right we do. But anyway, getting out of school in the late 80s, and I kind of looked at the landscape of banking, financial services, and I said, I need to stay in school. And that's what I did. I actually went to law school at Baylor and then got out and practiced law for about 2.5 years prior to coming back to Longview and then engaging at the bank, which is where I've been ever since.
Good or bad, that law move before finances?
It was good. I'll tell you the joke that I often share with people. I worked about 2.5 years, and I say it was the best 7 years of my life because I felt like it was that much work in that abbreviated period of time. But it was good. Yeah, it was very beneficial for preparing me for what was to come next in my life. I still use my law degree from time to time. And so, yeah, that was some great training, a little bit of a different background for a traditional community banker. But for me, it was very beneficial.
So Rogers and I got to meet each other by phone 12 and a half years ago. Mm-hmm. There were some cool things happening in my life, and a mutual friend of ours here at Moberly connected us and just said, hey, I think the two of you would hit it off, and here's a prayer item for both of you to be praying for one another in. And so I love the bond that we have as followers of Christ, that no matter how little we know about each other, once we realize we are Christians, we have this bond immediately. And
absolutely.
So, you know, here we are thousands of years behind Moses, but learning a lot about their transition between him and Joshua and someone that was kind of following him as somewhat a spiritual leader too. And so you have a great perspective tonight to help us kind of put a great exclamation point on essential leadership. And so we're looking forward to learn a lot from you. No pressure.
Yeah, but, right.
We saved the best for last.
I knew this was kind of the capstone, so
yeah.
We need to get it right.
Which, by the way, I'm just going to tell you this. There's a kind of a hidden story, if you don't know Rogers, to his story that I think makes this topic of succession much more paramount in your perspective. And so when we are reminded with the frailty of life, we realize real quick how important every day that we have is. And so I don't want to burst the bubble or spoil alert, so we may save that to the end. Is
okay.
That right?
Is that
all right?
Yeah, that's a big part of this story.
We're just going to talk today. Moses, we have tried to do our best to hit some great topics on leadership in the life of Moses. And if you look at the end of Deuteronomy 34, here's the scene. We realize real quick, verse 9, that this is it. Verse 9, Deuteronomy 34, Joshua the son of Nun was filled with the spirit of wisdom because Moses had laid his hands on him. So the Israelites obeyed him and did as the Lord commanded Moses. So right away we got our transition happening. Let's just admit this. I follow Laney Johnson, who'd been pastor of Moberly 37 and a half years. I said one time he'd been 37, and he corrected me. He said it's 37 and a half. And so kind of like that 7 years as an attorney there for you. So 37 and a half years is a long time, but he realized I'm not going to be here forever. Right. And then he said, but neither are you. Well, that's a huge kind of a gutsy statement to a young 34-year-old at the time. But no one's promised, let's think of leadership. No one's promised a leadership position until they die, except for the Supreme Court, I think. Isn't that right?
Right. And,
is that statewide too, or is that just not federal?
That's federal, and Ruth Bader Ginsburg may put that to the test. We'll see.
All right. That's true, Major. So every position in leadership has an expiration date. Yes. Moses dies at 120 years of age, and according to Deuteronomy 34:9, we're off and running right away with Joshua, who's a young buck. I mean, 70, 78 years old, somewhere in that mix. And he has served at Moses' side, I believe, most scholars say, for about four decades. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a long time to be junior partner. I mean, I don't even know if that was his title. He lives till about 110, and I think the whole secret of his success is the verse I just read. He was filled with the spirit of wisdom because Moses laid his hands on him. And, of course, we understand that in the church culture. We do a lot of that in praying for one another. But, Rogers, tell me about the blessing, and I'm sure there's challenges, too, of your dad being the one calling out the man, calling out the leader in you.
Let me first say just about the laying on of hands and everything, because as I mentioned, I was a member at Moberly for many years, and I was here when the transition took place between Dr. Johnson and you, Dr. Stone, and there was a ceremony and a pass the mantle. So I was telling Angie and you earlier, I still have a copy of the program from that day, and it was a very wonderful event. We did not have anything of that sort at the bank. We had a board of directors meeting, and that was pretty much it in terms of an event where it happened. But it was, I think, very helpful in terms of lending credibility to my succession, that my father was there as a part of that. And so, you know, I do look at that as a blessing in most ways, that it was my father who, you know, passed the mantle to me, if you will. He is the one who had really built the foundation upon which our bank was based. And again, I think so lent some credibility to the fact that I was going to be the successor as the CEO. And, you know, very much like Joshua, I had the privilege of working as an attendant or an aide in some ways to him for over two decades. Like I said, I've been CEO of the bank for about 5 years, but 20 years working at the bank prior to that, and got to work alongside him.
And had been his son your whole life.
And had been his son pretty much my whole life, I think. But yeah, and so I knew him well, kind of know what makes him tick, and vice versa, of course. But I think that really was at the time and continues to be helpful and instructive as I go out throughout carrying out my leadership responsibilities and duties.
So there's an interesting phrase in that verse we just read that says they obeyed Joshua as they obeyed Moses. Mm-hmm. You know, what do you make of that? Let's spend several questions on this. What do you make of that following a long tenured leader? How long had your dad been CEO?
Yeah, my dad had been CEO since 1970, basically.
Okay, so, and you officially became CEO?
Five years ago that I became CEO. I was president of the bank for 10 years prior to that, but the last five as CEO.
So following a long-term leader like that, a long-time leader, number one, that indicates great stability. I mean, it was alluring to me to come to a church, had a 37-year tenured pastor, and then a lot of the staff had been here a long time. And it just says something about stability, and especially in a financial world, stability is a big deal.
Right, I agree. That frankly gave me a lot of comfort, almost a safety net in some ways, knowing that the organization as a whole had a really strong foundation, and obviously strong foundational leadership through my father and others who had been at the helm for many years. So that was appealing and attractive and even comforting to me.
So help me understand this. So as a bank, as an industry, leading industry role that Texas Bank and Trust has had under his leadership, it did grow, and it certainly has grown under your leadership too. Yeah. So coming into that, is that a little intimidating, understanding its trajectory of growth before you've taken the reins?
Yeah, it's both. Again, comforting, but it is actually intimidating because I knew I had very big footsteps to fill, footprints to fill, and shoes to fill. So yes, from that standpoint, but I give him a lot of credit and others who were there among the board members who were very supportive and encouraging me. I could tell that they had a lot of confidence in my abilities to carry out that role well. And so while I was intimidated, I took great comfort in the fact that I had a strong group of supporters and encouragers surrounding me.
So I just got to ask you, do you end up talking in family gatherings? Do you end up talking a lot of business, a lot of shop?
My wife and my mother, if they were here, tell you it happens far too often. We try to guard against it,
yeah.
But yeah, it happens.
I'm pretty sure Joshua and Moses had some pretty cool conversations.
I'm sure they did.
About what was going on. So I wrote this down in my notes. Following a successful leader who's run the race well is only a problem for those who lack the character or the stamina to do the same.
Yeah.
So when we look at our predecessors, and we come in behind somebody, there's two aspects we want to look at tonight. Number one, what's that look like to follow somebody? But we talked a lot about that in previous weeks. And then I want to spend the second half of our time really talking about us beginning to have those thoughts of who's next, what's next,
yeah.
How do we set this up for success, that kind of thing. So that's what we're trying to do here tonight. But when you follow somebody like that, you can't be that person. We understand that. You can't try to emulate everything that person did, but you got to have the same character, the same stamina, if they've been a successful, faithful person.
Right.
I mean, that goes without saying.
Yeah, there are people in the room here tonight and others who will be listening, of course, who know both my father and I, including one person here who works at the bank, who knows this well. My father and I really have very different personalities.
Sure.
And very different leadership styles. I think about Moses and Joshua. I think you could say,
absolutely.
You know, they have very
That's
different
right.
leadership styles, and we're called to lead with their particular styles at particular times, at particular moments in history, and in carrying out God's vision. And so I really look at it from the standpoint of, you know, my father was the right leader for the organization at a certain time and during a certain era. And hopefully history will reflect that I was the right mm-hmm. leader also for a certain time and with certain challenges that we face now in an evolving financial services industry that maybe weren't present during his primary time as the leader of the organization. So to me, it's a little bit of knowing your place.
Yeah.
Understanding your particular skill set, having some self-awareness, and knowing what you bring to the table. And so I feel good and confident about where I am right now and as it relates to kind of the history of the bank.
Boy, and that confidence, I know you and I know you well, to know that that comes directly from your walk with the Lord and his yeah. walk with the Lord too. And you've got to have that confidence that, look at the sovereignty of God. He didn't put Joshua first, he put Moses first.
Right.
Even though Joshua early on said, yes, we can conquer this land,
right.
and he had the optimism, but he didn't have the call of God on his
right.
life at that point. And so you're right, there's a timeliness element there. So listen to this setup in verse 10 and 11. How would you like coming into this? So you've been tapped as the next leader, and then the Bible says, no prophet has arisen again in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. This is Joshua getting able to listen to this. He was unparalleled for all the signs and wonders the Lord sent him to do against the land of Egypt, to Pharaoh, his officials, all of the land, for all the mighty acts of power and terrifying deeds that Moses performed in the sight of all of Israel. All right, there you go, Joshua.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great setup, you know? I mean, so basically, there is no one in the world like the person you're following. Boy, how do you navigate that? Because you have the same thing. You have the reality of knowing I am not my dad. Now, you and I have something in common here, too. We both are juniors,
mm-hmm.
and so
mm-hmm.
we actually have our dad's names.
Right.
I have my dad's hairline and height. So, you know, but in all seriousness, I mean, there is a lot of comparisons going on, but clearly, you know, you're not that person, and you're never going to be that person.
That's right. That's right. And again, I think that gets back to self-awareness, accepting who you are. You know, my dad would even tell you, talking about our leadership styles and our various skill sets, and to give you, you know, we talked about my law background. He's got a background as a CPA. And mm-hmm. so, you know, he's kind of the numbers guy, more the words guy. We have other people who have complementary pieces. pieces to it. So that's how we view it. And yes, my dad, well, I'll tell you, he is in the Texas Bankers Hall of Fame. So he is literally a Hall of Famer as it relates to Texas community banking.
And There's nobody like him.
He is a very special man, not only as a banker, but as a person. I'm extremely blessed to have him as my father, as my mentor, as my hero. I recognize that. I appreciate that. I'm blessed to get to learn from him and to watch him lead by example. At the same time, I recognize that I'm not that and am never going to be that. But that is not to say that I don't believe that I have something to offer. Now, back to what you were saying before, the only way I can really do that successfully is if I'm in the Word,
right,
and I'm seeking not only observing him, and I'm talking about my dad, as a leader by example and as a mentor, but I need to seek guidance and wisdom from God, because God provided guidance and wisdom to Moses in a different way than he did to Joshua. I mean, Joshua was, you know, the action Jackson of the time, right? And Moses maybe more contemplative, more methodical. So even their interrelationship with God was different, but they both sought his wisdom and counsel.
Yeah,
and I know I'm compelled to do that.
And very much
so,
because in Moses, we've already seen multiple times, you know, he's been able to have face-to-face conversations with God. I mean, who has that?
Right.
You know?
Just
and
Moses.
So, and then Joshua 1 opens up with, and we'll focus on this a little bit, but the power of the Word. Mm-hmm. And he says, we got to stay faithful to the Word. We got to stay in the Word, you know, all this, which is great. But that's a different aspect of a relationship with God. I mean, I followed Dr. Johnson, and first thing I heard about him was, I mean, I didn't hear Deuteronomy 34, 11, and 12, but I had plenty of people tell me, now you realize that Dr. Johnson knows the New Testament by heart.
Yes.
And what do you say to that? You just kind of go, well, praise the Lord, you know? I mean, that's great. And oh, by the way, he knows everyone's name. You
yes,
know? So when you follow someone like that, you've got to realize, okay, I'm not that person. There's no way I can be that person. And clearly give honor where honor's due, something we've talked about a lot here. But so we move into a transition into Joshua, and let's just kind of make a quick transition here. So Joshua's on the scene. God anoints Joshua and tells Moses, here's the guy, he's going to follow you. Let's do a little peeking in between the lines. How much thought do you think Moses really gave to the fact of a succession plan? Because he's been kind of a loner for a lot of his life.
He has. And, you know, I've thought about Moses, too, in thinking about this podcast and thinking about my relationship with my dad. Understand, Moses had sons, right?
Yep,
and he didn't keep
that's
it in
exactly
the family,
right.
You know, and ultimately Joshua did rise to the forefront, I guess, or cream rise to the top or whatever. But, you know, I do think Moses, you know, at the end, I think if he had the opportunity to reflect, I think he would be very confident about and comfortable with his choice and be proud of that choice, obviously his choice and God's choice.
But, Yeah, so I don't think we see a lot of that. I think Joshua has a better grasp of who am I bringing up behind me than Moses did.
Agreed.
I think Moses was kind of the sole leader, the principal leader, the planter. We would use the church planter terminology. Mm-hmm. Joshua takes him in a whole different direction, conquers the land. Mm-hmm. He's the fighter, like you said. But I think he, in his later life, actually gives a little. In fact, I love toward the end of his life, and he's like, give me that mountain, you know. I mean, he's still ready to go. Let's open Joshua 1 real quick and make a little transition into Joshua's life. After the death of Moses, the Lord's servant, the Lord spoke to Joshua. That's got to be encouraging, you know. So he didn't take him up to Mount Sinai, but he did speak to him.
Right.
And he said, who had served Moses, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now you and all the people prepare to cross over the Jordan to the land I'm giving the Israelites. So following a dearly beloved brother, a leader, a mentor, a father, boy, it really reveals something about the people that you're leading, not just the person you're following. And so here's my thought with that, and I would love you to drill into this. He tells Joshua, prepare to cross over. Prepare to do the very thing Moses never did. Now, originally he was going to do that, but we know Moses had a struggle there with faith, and God said he wouldn't. But I love the fact that shows us a kind of a fault of Moses. I mean, it reminds us that these people who followed Moses, as much as they kind of had a love-hate relationship at times, they knew how to overlook his faults. So if you're the new guy coming in, you kind of got to go, hey, wait a minute. He had some faults too, and if they put up with his faults, maybe they'll put up with mine. You know, just a little bit of not self-deprecating humor, just awareness.
Yeah, I agree. Awareness. I mean, you said it. I mean, Moses was a man. Okay,
right.
And as such, of course, he had faults. And in the same way, I look to my father as my predecessor, knowing that he has faults. And you're right. So maybe there is a little comfort that you know there will be some tolerance for mistakes that we make along the way. So long as we're focused on the destination, as they were in this case. So long as we focus on the destination, the path may vary a little bit from time to time, and certainly may vary from what was happening previously. But so long as there is trust in you as a leader that we are all headed toward the right destination, I think there is a lot of forgiveness involved by the Father.
I just keep thinking, if I was Joshua, that might have been a little bit of encouragement. As gutsy as Joshua was, I mean, he's following Moses.
Yes.
You know, and Moses is the one, and Elijah that even Jesus brings back and plays a later role in even the end of times. And so you think, I mean, that he represents the law, Elijah represents the prophets, and I mean, there's nobody like Moses. And so we put him up on this plateau and this pedestal. Same thing happens to leadership. You put an initial in front of someone's name or a title behind their name, and all of a sudden they become this untouchable. They're a perfect person. They don't mess up. And yet we all know we do because we're all humans. It had to mean a little bit of encouragement to Joshua to go, you know what? I think I'm going to make it too.
Yeah, I think so too. And I think you know, as you go throughout the book of Joshua and others, you see that borne out.
Sure,
where there was, like I said, acceptance of some occasional faults from time to time.
Yeah, and I think even in a good way, you said the word tolerance. I think that gets a bad rap, the word tolerance. But I think in this way, it helped him understand they're going to tolerate me too.
That's right.
You know,
that's right.
There's a safety net there.
That's
so
right.
What's the caution though? When we talk about leaders, you see this a lot with presidents in our country. So when there's a comparison made or a contrast made, it's so easy to pinpoint the bad that they're doing. But when they get out of office, all of a sudden it's, oh, you know, they were this, and they accomplished this, and it's great. And it's easier to kind of throw them a bone a little bit and talk about the good that they've accomplished. But I mean, the reality, there is a caution here in pointing out people's faults.
Absolutely. And I think you and I, in particular, have both experienced that. And we have been careful to honor the legacy of our predecessors. You know, it really serves no purpose to go back and second guess things or criticize things. Because again, I think this is giving credit to the people who, you know, maybe recognized, yeah, that maybe wasn't the perfect way to do it, but that's in the past, okay? Yeah. We're moving forward now. And so I'm sensitive to that. I know you are as well, about, again, honoring the legacy of your predecessor, while at the same time acknowledging that perhaps there are some things that need to be changed, some right away perhaps, and some over time. But you can do that in a respectful manner. You know, I think the cautionary tale is to not, again, throw your predecessor under the bus, because you're going to lose a lot of the followers if you do that right off the bat.
So that's an interesting observation, because you're in an industry that is so numbers, numerically driven.
Yeah.
And we can talk about college football coaches a lot too, but same thing. It's a win and loss thing.
Absolutely.
And so we can spiritualize a story like Moses and Joshua, and sometimes it gets easier to explain away or even justify low performance. But in your industry, I mean, you got to know that, man, those numbers start changing too much in the wrong direction. You can forget the legacy. You can forget the name for a minute. I mean, you're on the chopping block. There's a mentality there. I'm not saying that's true. I just mean in such a vulnerable field, there's got to be a worry there. And so I think Joshua could relate to that. He's kind of a little worried. I'm going to do something I've never done before.
Yeah, there's no question about that. And you're right. We are very much numbers driven. We're governed by several regulatory agencies who are looking at all those numbers very closely. So there is some pressure that goes along with that. And it's just, you know, one of the aspects of succession that you have to navigate.
So what if you had this going into it? All right. So verse 3, what if you had this? God is speaking. He says, I've given you every place where the sole of your foot treads, just as I promised Moses. That's got to be good, you know?
Yeah, that's a good one.
Your territory will be from the wilderness and Lebanon to the great Euphrates River, all the land of the Hittites, which, by the way, that's not necessarily true today, but we'd like it to be, and west of the Mediterranean Sea. I mean, what a promise. No one's going to be able to stand against you as long as you live. I will be with you just as I was with Moses. I will not leave you or forsake you. What a promise.
Untouchable, unstoppable. Yeah. I think about some of this passage, and I think about Jeremiah 29:11, and what a great promise to have from God as he's entering his phase of leadership.
So he is being asked by God to do something Moses never did, and you certainly had to make some changes that came along that your father didn't even maybe face some of the challenges that you're facing. And yet there's still that calm assurance of knowing I'm the right man at the right time, got the Lord on my side, that kind of thing. So there are things we want to change, but then there are some things that don't need to change. What are some of those things in your life, in your industry, at Texas Bank of Trust, that don't need to change?
You know, I will take you back to about, I guess now, 11 years ago during the Great Recession, okay, and a big banking crisis that went on at that time. That was such a great period for us to learn about sticking to basic, what I'll call blocking and tackling, if you will, and traditional banking principles, which we had done. And that was reassurance that, you know, we're in the relationship building business. We're in the service business. We all like to make a profit. We are a for-profit organization, so that's nice. But it really is for us more about serving our customers and serving our communities. And so that, the philosophy of what we're all about, I never, ever want to touch that.
That's good.
So there are, you know, aspects you talked about. Yeah, my dad, he didn't grow up with computers like we did and say, so, you know, that he would be the first to admit, you know, he's not a technology guru or things like that, something like that. And of course, it's moving so fast now, I feel out of touch sometimes too with all the technology that's happening. But we have had to evolve necessarily, to keep up with changing technology and the way in which we serve our customers, you know, because we still have people that want to come in and sit down and have a cup of coffee and, you know, do their banking business with a teller, you know, face to face. But we also have customers that we never see that are doing business on their iPad at 3 a.m. in the morning, right? And so the ways that we serve our customers and the means to doing that has changed and had to evolve. And so we've had to evolve as an organization. But I never want to touch our service philosophy and what we're all about.
I think the bigger issue is so that you do see the time log when Angie and I are online banking at 3 a.m. You do see that? Man, wow. So let's explore that for a minute. So technology is a great element there. So does that produce a little bit of fear in you when you think about succession and you think about what's coming after you and what they're going to have to deal with? And, you know, you spend time with anybody who's 20 years older than you, no matter what age you are, and they'll say, yeah, well, back when it was slower and now it's faster. And we can all make that statement. But what does that produce in you when you think about that next succession plan?
Well, I'll answer in a couple of ways. Yes, there is some fear associated with that. I think it was Don Rumsfeld who has a quote about, you know, known knowns, known unknowns, and then the unknown unknowns. Those are the things we really worry about, right? And so there is an aspect of that. We know that there are changes coming down the pike. I mean, what's the iPhone been around, 12 years now? Yeah. And what did we do before we had iPhones and that kind of technology? But yet, you know, those were things we didn't know about 20 years. So you know things are coming down the pike, and we're going to have to adapt to those. But here's where I feel good about that. And I guess I'll relate it back to me personally, because I kind of do know what I don't know. Glenn, the very first business book I ever read was Lee Iacocca's autobiography. And it was back when he, you know, saved Chrysler, of course, creator of the Mustang and all that, but then he saved Chrysler. And it had a passage in there when he was asked about the fact that he was surrounding himself with a bunch of really brilliant financiers and attorneys and engineers. And they say, don't you feel threatened by these people? He said, absolutely not. I know what I know. I want to know what they know. Okay. And so I think we've done a pretty good job of surrounding ourselves within the organization of some really bright, talented, oftentimes younger people that are coming along and have those skill sets that I think are going to be complementary to those of us who do have some gray hair and have been doing this for a while. And so that kind of offsets the fear I have about the future, knowing we're putting the right people in the right seats on the bus to help carry us forward.
You think we're in an era now, too, in almost any industry where you see reverse mentoring was a book that came out probably 10 years ago, but that was almost a foreign concept in our parents' and grandparents' generation, that you would choose to learn from the younger. I mean, we certainly don't see Moses and Joshua doing that. It's not like Moses says, well, Joshua, tell me how to use that new phone you got there. I mean, there's none of that.
Right.
It's, I'm the man of God at this point, you're the man of God at this point. But we live in a different culture where the change velocity is beyond what we can even consume.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have a bunch of millennials working for us. I think millennials get a bad rap. Oftentimes, I love hearing what's on their mind, and they do come at things from a slightly different perspective. We have had for many years at our bank a student board of directors composed of high school seniors, and it's interesting to hear what their thoughts are about the banking industry. We have some vision-focused committees that are made up of our younger employees, and so we do seek that out, and absolutely. I feel like I learn a lot from them, including, not in the banking industry per se, but my kids. And if they're listening to this, I don't want to give them too much credit, but I learn a lot from my 20-something kids, and so I think they're absolutely. Absolutely, is a lot of reverse mentoring that is something of a new concept in this day and age.
So I wonder if that will eradicate some of the comparisons that are natural in any successful transition. So let me explain. So in verse 6, 7, 8, 9, be strong, courageous, for you will distribute the land I swore to their fathers. So we're tying back into previous generation. Above all, be strong, very courageous. How many times is he telling be strong and courageous? To observe the whole instruction, my servant Moses commanded you. Don't turn from it to the right. Immediately, Joshua begins his day of leadership by hearing Moses, 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 Moses. Do you get tired? It's inevitable. Do you get tired of those comparisons?
In my case, I would say that I really don't, because I do feel like I had such a great mentor and such a great leader, such a great example. And I said, my dad's my hero, and he knows that, and he knows the respect and love I have for him, the admiration for him. So I'm okay. I think that's part of, you know, honoring him and honoring his legacy and also giving me a goal.
Yeah,
right?
That's right. That's right.
Okay, because I guarantee you, you know, Joshua, he might have felt a little bit intimidated by that, but he's also saying, I want to be like
no,
that.
No, I agree with you. I think just like you and your dad, I think Joshua was inspired every time
Absolutely.
He heard the word Moses. I think he looked at him as his hero and thought, man, I want to be that too, and I can't be him, but what an encouragement. If God sees in me what he saw in Moses, I mean, that's got to be a encouragement. So picking up this mantle of leadership is one thing, but let's talk about the importance of you now leading in a way that sets up your successor. And you don't have to spill the beans. You don't have to tell us what that plan looks like or anything like that. But you certainly have a different appreciation for this process, having gone through that process. Your dad didn't go through that process. You did.
Right.
And so talk to us a little bit about the importance of now you living in a way of knowing not only are you learning from, but you've got to leave and lead.
Yeah, and this is where it gets a little bit into my personal journey, my faith journey,
Great.
Spiritual journey, and which was a health journey. And again, some of my friends in the room know about this, but I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin lymphoma in January of 2018. Had to go down to MD Anderson and participated in a clinical trial as we treated that through 7 months of immunotherapy and then 4 months of chemotherapy. Let me get to the bottom line, because I want to share this right out of the bat. I'm doing great. And I'm a year removed from that and healthy, and all my checkups have gone well, and God has healed me, and I'm so thankful for that, and thankful to many of the people in the room and others listening for prayers lifted up on my behalf. Intercessory prayer, man, it works.
That's
if you have any doubts, trust me.
That's right. But
when I was going through chemotherapy treatment then last fall, I had to do that actually down at MD Anderson in Houston, and had to be away from the bank for much of of that time. And so if we didn't have a succession plan, we were going to find out real quickly. And the good news is we did, and I had a great team of leaders surrounding me that kind of stood in the gap for me. And so kind of trial by fire, we got to put our succession plan into play, at least on a temporary basis. And I'm proud to say and thankful that I can look back and say, you know, they carry the baton. And if you were to look back, you know, at our charts and graphs and all of those numbers you talked about, you would see that we really never missed a beat. And it was. And so
let me ask you a question real
quick.
Yeah,
go ahead.
So in the middle of facing the reality of life and death.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying to be histrionic. I just, this is the reality of it. You're asking the eternal questions, the earthly questions of how long am I here? In all of that, you hear a lot of talk sometimes from leaders who will say, you know, well, I really don't care what happens after me, after I'm gone. And it's almost kind of this slaying, arrogant or apathetic approach toward the future. But my critique of that, of any leader that would say something like that, and I don't want to just make this generalized statement, but I criticize that philosophy because you really don't value what you're leading and who you're leading if you could be that flippant. Now, I know as a Christian, people say, well, it really doesn't matter when I'm gone. I know where I'm at. That's a personal thing. But when you think about the public leadership aspect, you didn't just throw your hands up and go, well, it doesn't really matter.
So
what does that do to your psyche as you think about what's next?
So I'm going to give a lot of credit to my wife, Kelly, here. And some of y'all know my wife, Kelly, and I didn't talk about this earlier. We have five great kids. We're a blended family. I have my three older kids who were all raised here in this church, and then we still have two at home. And they were just a wonderful source of support for me. But Kelly, in particular, early on after my diagnosis, she said, you know, you've got 485 people who work with you at the bank, 485 families that are going to be paying attention to how you and how we deal this diagnosis, and many other, you know, friends and associates and colleagues who are going to be observing that. And so, you know, I'll answer your question in two parts. Yes, from the bank standpoint, you know, I needed to be strong and courageous,
right?
through that diagnosis and to show that I did have confidence and I was secure in my faith and am secure in my faith and that, you know, things are going to be okay kind of regardless of what happens. But, you know, the bigger aspect of that was related to things that are eternal. And allowing that to become, and how we coped with this diagnosis and a challenge on a health standpoint, to allow that to be a part of our testimony to a larger group. And we took that to heart. And again, I give her a lot of credit for that, kind of setting me straight and making me realize this is an opportunity.
That's right.
And that's exactly what it was. Romans 8:28, Glenn, is what we claimed as kind of our verse throughout this, knowing that God orchestrates everything for those who love him. And we were looking at it as an opportunity to kind of reassure both our bank family and our greater family of friends and loved ones, and also to provide a witness or testimony to them of how you go about dealing with crisis when they inevitably come your way.
Yeah, I think for the person in any leadership position, business, president, small or large role, for the leader to say, well, I'm going through something now that is just so consuming. I can't think about anybody else. I just got to think about me. It's really short-sighted because even Jesus said, to whom much is given, much is required. And you're still the leader. You may not be logging the hours. You may not be putting the hours at the work or whatever the case may be, but you're still the leader. You know, I look at that in my role as a pastor and I go, still a pastor. Number one at home, number two in the church. And so there's never a time you just check it at the door and go, right, well, I'm not being leader today. As a Christian, we're always a Christian, which means we're always a leader. And so I think sometimes it is so easy to get so self-focused and self-absorbed and just say, I just need a break. I just need a me moment kind of thing. But you never see that in Moses and Joshua. And I think in Joshua's defense, that's why God gave him those repetition, almost staccato repetition, be strong, courageous, again and again and again, going back to the power of the Word of God, because he knew that's what's going to guide him forward. Because there are those days that we get a little just kind of self-pity moment.
Yeah.
I mean, we all have them, right?
Sure, Sure.
And you kind of want to focus in on you. But to really just be cavalier about what happens after you're gone, I think shows the true character of the leader.
Well, you know, God didn't call us on this earth to serve only for a brief period of time. I mean, there's retirement, that term is not really talked about in the Bible, right? All to be serving throughout the entirety of our lives, and then our heavenly reward awaits us.
I had a good friend that was a college president many years ago, and he made the statement to me. He said, "So I can't control one thing that happens the day after I'm gone from here, from this position.
Right.
It's gone. I can't control anything. I have no authority." He said, "But I can influence a lot of things." And clearly Moses did, and clearly Joshua did. And so talk to us about how you're influencing the succession plan that you guys either may already have, or you've discussed, or you're preparing for, whether it's a person, a team, whatever. But how are you influencing that?
Yeah, and we do actually have a written specific plan. That gets back to the fact that we have regulators, and they want to see that.
Sure.
You know, they want to know that the safety and soundness of the bank is going to be protected for the long term. And so I'm thinking about that all the time, talking with my current leadership team about successors, and even identifying people. Okay, if this were to happen, you know, who's in place that could, you know, take on this particular role. So we talk about it a lot. And you know, again, back to things, it's going to be a different era. After my time is done, you know, it's going to be a different era. There are going to be different challenges facing us. But one thing I never want to lose, again, and I attribute to my father for kind of establishing the culture of our bank. And you know, we're not a church, we're not a ministry, but we think of ourselves as a faith-based organization.
Well, if anybody knows anything about Texas Bank and Trust, you know there's a plumb line of faith that goes through everything you guys do.
And that's right. And we certainly embrace that, and that's who we want to be. So what I want to do is protect and preserve the culture. The way banking happens as an industry will necessarily change over time. But I want the culture of our organization and what we stand for, what we believe in, what we strive to accomplish, to never change. And I think I view that as kind of my greatest responsibility in the role in which I'm currently serving.
That's awesome. Rogers, thank you. So any other takeaways for successive leadership transitions?
You know, I think I do have one thing I want to say. Jim Collins is a great author, Good to Great. I don't know if y'all have talked about him or any of his materials during this, but he talks about different levels of leaders, and I know y'all have been talking about that as well. And what he defines as level five leaders are those leaders who take organizations from good to great.
Right.
All sorts of different leadership styles, all sorts of different leadership qualities. But the two that he found consistently in those people were humility. You know, not worrying about who gets the credit and having humility, and then a fierce drive or will or ambition to get things done. And so I would say for those who are looking to grow into those types of leaders, taking organizations from good to great, whatever your organization or cause may be, those two things are absolute must.
Well, that'll preach in the home, you know, for parents distilling that in their kids. That'll preach to the employer looking at the next generation or the next potential leader who's going to take their place. I know that would minister a lot to me, saying, well, not only do you see humility there, but you see initiative and drive, like you said.
And they're not mutually exclusive.
No,
they work hand in hand.
Absolutely. That's good stuff. No. Well, praise the Lord. Rogers Pope Jr., thanks for being our guest today.
My pleasure.
It's been a joy. I want to encourage you, if you're listening online or here in person, to go back and check out mavrilla.org/leadership, and you can see and hear other episodes of this. You can also find this on Google Play or iTunes. I'll tell you, this is our last one on essential leadership. We are going to have a podcast in a new direction in the new year. In fact, this Sunday, I'm preaching on the wise men bowing before the Lord. I was thinking about the humility factor and how important that'll be for us. But speaking of the sermon, it'll be a sermon-based podcast. So one of our pastors will join me, and we'll just dig a little deeper than we have the opportunity to do on a Sunday morning. So, Rogers, I know you're in Tyler, but that'll give you something to listen to.
Absolutely.
As you drive down the road.
I will tune in.
And we're going to go through Romans together starting next year. So that'll be a lot of fun for us. So it'll be called Extra Point, and you'll just be listening for more information about that. Thanks again for joining us today. Would you just say thank you to Rogers Pope Jr.?
Thank you.
So, Brandon, by the way, how much fun has this been? We've never tried anything like this before. I feel like Joshua. We're doing something that's never been done, a live podcast with an audience.
Yeah, it's been a lot of fun. And, you know, it's funny because I was talking with Chuck King, who was our very first guest this last week, and he's like, man, you saved the best for last with the Rodgers. And I said, man, we had some great guests. And I know that several of you guys, or a lot of you, have been here almost every week. And we really appreciate you guys being a part of this with us. And this is obviously a time where we like to ask questions. You may have a question. You may have heard something that you want to ask Rodgers. And so we want to open up the floor to that. If you might have one. Anybody have a question?
Not an investment banking question.
Yes.
Right? Or is that fair game?
Yes. Okay. This is Archer.
Do you foresee any of your children following in your footsteps?
I get that question a lot. In fact, I was wondering if Glenn was going to ask me about that. Let me tell you about my kids. And I didn't do this on the podcast.
I just figured you'd put it back on me. That's why I didn't ask you that one.
So I have a 27-year-old. And again, my older three kids all grew up in this church, and I'm thankful for that. I have a 27-year-old son who lives in New York City. He is a professional actor and actually making a living doing that, which is awesome. But he is trained in acting, actually has a Master of Fine Arts degree in classical acting, so Shakespeare and stuff like that. When he was about 10 years old, I was working at the bank one Saturday, and he was up there with me, and he's like, Dad, I'm bored. And I said, well, let me show you some of our financial statements, and let me walk you through that. In about 3 seconds, I knew and he knew he was never going to be a banker, all right? So he was not. I have a daughter who is a graduate of Mississippi State University. She went there to pursue golf. And got out of that, went to work for the university, working with their golf program, and after about 6 months, decided that was not for her. And it was a business degree that she has, but she had felt a tugging really for 2 years prior to that to do something ministry related. And in fact, that's what she's pursuing now. She's working at a church in Oxford, Mississippi. And by the way, I should point out, if y'all saw the Egg Bowl last week, that's Ole Miss is in Oxford,
yeah,
Mississippi
that's
State
tough right there.
Is in Starkville, but she did.
It's a mission field.
It is a mission field, but she told me she was sure on this past Sunday that she wore the maroon of Mississippi State to her church in Oxford, Mississippi. But she's doing well. And then I have a son who is a film and digital media major at Baylor University. Too early to tell with him. I have two stepkids, a 17-year-old stepdaughter at home, and then a seventh grade boy who's at home. So we'll see. We do have a nephew who's in the banking business in Alabama. I'm not sure, you know, what'll evolve there. But I guess the answer is not yet, but I still have hope, okay?
Well, that's good. Another question right here.
Did your grandfather start the bank?
Yeah. Actually, my great-grandfather, Anita, started the bank back in 1912. And it's a real convoluted chart as to how we got where we are now. But in 1912, he started a bank in Overton, Texas. And my grandfather subsequently went to work at that bank. That was my great-grandfather, who was my dad's mother's father. Okay. And then her husband, my grandfather, went to the work at the bank in later years. My dad, and again, I wouldn't want to put this on the podcast or anything, but I tease him about this. So my dad's a really smart guy, too, in addition to being a great guy. He graduated as valedictorian at Baylor University, and his first job was going to work for the little bank in Overton. And I'm like, really? That's what, you know, you're valedictorian. You can go anywhere you want. You want to go to Overton. But that's what he did. I tease him about that. And he worked at the bank in Overton for a few years right out of college. And I actually worked there during college. So at the bank my great-granddad started years ago. But I guess that takes us, 107 years.
Wow.
with four generations of bankers in the family.
Yeah, one back there.
Oh, right. Somebody else? Question?
I thought I saw a hand. Maybe not.
Right. Well, maybe your son can do commercials for banks.
Yeah, that's true. You know. That's true, Ryan. We can consider that.
Okay, sure.
I don't know. Uh-oh. I don't know if you're allowed to
Uh-oh.
Make a comment.
Make it no questions, but we have comments.
Okay.
And opinions.
Yes.
I work for the bank. And when I first came to work for the bank 15 years ago, Roger, I didn't see him that much. And I was concerned because I was starting a new program at the bank, and I thought, what's wrong? You know, he's not coming to see me. Well, he came to my office one day, and I said, I don't see you that much. He said, if you see me, that means you're doing something wrong. So he's the type of leader that lets you lead. And, you know, if there is something wrong, then that's when you see him. So you don't want to see him. You want him to stay away. You want him to stay away. But another thing about Raj and his dad, they know every employee by name. And that is so impressive. And I think Mr. Pope is just, it's awesome. He speaks to everyone. He's at the bank every day. And he calls everybody by their name when he sees them. And I just think that is so awesome.
And Sherry, by the way, that is something that Moses nor Joshua could have done. I'd just like to point that out. So well done.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Well, I got a quick question as we get ready to close this. What's something that you're learning right now?
Like here this instant, this no. You know, let me preface it, Brandon, by saying that, and Sherry knows this, so I send out an email every Monday morning to the entire staff, and I've called it different things over the years, but what I call it of late, the latest version of it, I call it what I learned last week. Okay, and so that's what it is, and Sherry gets that, and again, I get usually good feedback on that, and it may be something, you know, very light about, hey, here's one that's coming up, I'll give you a preview, is, hey, here are these great authors, and they rank the top 10 books of all time. I was thinking about maybe somebody would give me a Christmas gift, but, you know, stuff like that, but a lot of it is obviously more detailed. You know, I guess I would say, and so I'm learning, it's a lifetime of learning, right? We have new employee orientation, and I tell those new employees, especially those who just got out of school, I'm like, congratulations, you're not done with school. School never is over, right? It's a lifetime of learning. What I'm learning most is probably something that we touched on in the podcast, and that is having the ability and the willingness, even you use the term self-deprecation, if that's appropriate, to acknowledge and say, I don't understand that. And Sherry, that might have been the case. I didn't understand the program that you were working on. I know what you're talking about. And I'm trying to be a collaborator. So I'm trying to do a better job of just that and bringing in people who can help me learn things. I don't know if any of y'all got to go to the George W. Bush event last night at Laterno University. It was a neat event. And he actually talked about that. He said when he was in his role as president, he learned so much. And he said, you know, it was pretty easy because you would like to say, you know, I'd like to know about the example he said was the Kosovo Police Force. And sure enough, in 5 minutes, you've got an expert on the Kosovo Police Force in your office. When you're president, you can do that, right? But he said that was really important for him to continue his learning even throughout that process. I mean, he's the leader of the free world, but he's still humble enough to know there's a lot of things that I don't know. And so I feel like I'm learning all the time, and specifically, again, as we touched upon, trying to pull some thoughts out of some of our millennial employees, because I really do think the generation gaps or the breaks in generations, that's true. And they approach things and bring different perspectives to the table that I might have, or boomers might. I barely made it, but I'm Gen X, or boomers, or, you know, my dad's silent generation. They have a different thought process, and I welcome that and embrace that.
That's great. Thank you. Well, let's thank Rogers Pope Jr. for coming in again today. One of our traditions is we give away. We've got a leadership book that we want to give away tonight. And in less than 2 weeks, you'll have a birthday. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay.
Next Friday, in fact.
Someone has a birthday. Do we have any December birthdays? December birthdays here in the room?
Oh, you got to be kidding me. Really?
I
have to tell y'all something. So my birthday, and you really don't have to buy me a book that's on the list, Sherry, but I share a birthday with my brother-in-law and his wife, all three of us, share a birthday.
Wow.
And yet no December birthdays.
No December birthdays. Well, let's go with Pastor Glenn's birthday. What about April?
April 30th.
April birthdays.
Any April birthdays?
April.
There we go.
Yes, there we go.
There we go.
You are a winner tonight. Come on right there. Paula's going to take care of you and stuff. We're going to put some questions up on the screen. Again, we've had some great, great guests this semester, and it's been great. I think I've always wanted to go and have coffee after a lot of these episodes and say, hey, let's continue to talk about that. And so that's been great. So here's some questions. Discuss those around your table. I hope you have a great time tonight. Thanks for being here and being here this semester. After you get through discussion, you can be dismissed. Thank you.